acorns are dropping off my Chinese house. Two ducks in my spyglass, fiery as a mouse. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.
Welcome to Yarns at Yin Hu, a podcast about the fiber arts and other post-apocalyptic skills. Episode 75, Not Only, But Also. Sunday, April 19th, 2015. I'm your host, Sarah, podcasting from Yin Hu Chaoyuan, Silver Lake Tea House. Show notes for this episode can be found on my website, yarnsatyinhu.com. You can find me on social media as Sarah Pomegranate. The Yarns at Yin Hu podcast has a Facebook page, and it's available on iTunes. Today's episode includes the following segments: Ever-Expanding Skill Set, Sheep to Shawl, The Back Porch, Yarn Lover at Large, Double Happiness, and Gratitude Journal. I'd like to extend a special welcome to folks who have introduced themselves on the introductions thread on Ravelry: Knit Girl Walking, Pam from Murrieta, California; Terry Glow, Terry from Augusta, Maine; Hamaker, Pam from Raleigh, North Carolina; Colton Fiber Lady from Colton, Oregon; Sticks and Scones, who is Leslie from Holliston, Massachusetts. And there were recently two new iTunes reviews from K-Pot and Mrs. Miller 2008. Thank you so much for saying hello, for participating on the threads, for leaving an iTunes rating or review. It's all great feedback and really keeps me going doing the podcast. I'd like to announce the winner. I promised to announce on episode 75. This is for the Turtle Maid contest that has been running on Ravelry. Jen of Turtle Maid Spindles has offered a spindle of the winner's choice to a listener of the Yarns at Yin Hu podcast. Nearly 50 of you entered the contest, and the winner is, for post number 10, Sonoma Mama, who is Kay from Windsor, California. And I have learned to say Kay's Ravelry name without doing the stuttering that I was doing last time. So congratulations, Kay. Thanks to everyone who has entered to win. A number of you praised Turtle Maid Spindles. It seems like you're already satisfied customers. And some other folks also mentioned that if they weren't winners, they would probably be heading on over to the Etsy shop to do some shopping. So I hope you do that and support Jen and her very sturdy, nicely spinning spindles that are great for beginners. And they're also great for spinning outside or in uncertain weather conditions and situations. Recently on the Interweave newsletter, there was a little article about walking with your drop spindle, and I think that these 3D printed drop spindles would be an excellent candidate for figuring out how to take a stroll and take your spinning along. So Kay, you should get in touch with me about your win, and I will be letting Jen know that you're going to pick out your spindle. In May, I will be hosting sort of a, I guess it's a contest. It's going to be held on Instagram. And I've been reading on different sewing blogs about something called Me Made May. It's a challenge to folks who make their own garments and accessories to wear something that they have made themselves every day in May. I think that's a tall order, and especially for knitters, a lot of what we knit isn't always seasonally appropriate for all times of year. But I thought that whenever in May, we do wear something that we made ourselves, either a garment or an accessory, it would be a fun idea to post it. And I will be offering 3 prizes, a Ravelry pattern prize, a set of handmade Rolex prize. So any of you spinners who have not tried a Rolex, you could even give me some information about colors you like, and I will send you off some Rolex for you to spin with. And then the final prize will be a project bag, a small wedge-shaped project bag, handmade by me. I will have more information on a Ravelry thread, and this contest will not start until May, but I'm not certain about my recording schedule between now and the end of April, so I wanted to just put that out there that this contest is coming up, and I hope that you decide to participate. Like I said, there is absolutely no imperative to wear something handmade every day in May, but this contest is open for those days when you do that. Since I've last recorded, spring has truly arrived in the Delaware Water Gap, and we've just been having some beautiful, beautiful sunny weather. Yesterday, I decided to get my energy up and clean my entire porch. Yinhu is a very distinctive home in that it was not built as a home. It was built as a tea room and gift shop. During the summers in the Delaware Water Gap in the mid and late 20s, when Yinhu Chaiyuan, Silver Lake Tea House, was happening business, this location was very popular with travelers and golfers, pretty trendy people, not so much in the way it is now, but Fred Waring and all of his pals would come down. There were a lot of entertainers who entertained at Castle Inn, Shawnee Inn, and this little house served luncheons and suppers on the porch in the days before 1955. This creek behind the house had a dam, and so there was a beautiful lake just beyond the railing of the tea house. We have some old photographs with canoes and pleasure boats down there. And it is just really, really charming with a porch that wraps all the way around the house. In the early days, there were buggies going up and down the road, and there wasn't a lot of traffic. This was really a quiet country road. Now the road is paved. All winter, salt and cinders were dumped, and the house sits very close to the road. The entire porch was covered with salt and silt and a really disgusting mess. So it took about 6 hours to scrub everything down, wash all of the windows, hose down the furniture, you know, a really energetic day spent cleaning the porch of Yinhu. It was beautiful, sunny weather, and so it didn't feel like too much of a chore. And all day long, motorcycle riders made their way up and down the road. In fact, you may even hear some of them on this recording because it's another lovely, sunny day. In the afternoon, late afternoon, when I was all done, and by that time Samuel had joined me and he was working on the cleaning too, we finally sat down, big glasses of iced tea, and we had a bald eagle sighting. I had seen something flying further downstream. It was a bird with a pretty large wingspan, but just the day before, we had seen a red-tailed hawk flying, and it was being attacked by crows. So I just kind of had it in my mind that it was probably a hawk. But then it had landed in a tree for a while and then took off again, and it came right up behind our house in a tree overlooking the creek. And it perched there, and it was sort of preening and ruffling up its feathers. It didn't look like it was fishing at all. It didn't seem like it was peering into the water, even though there are a lot of fish in the water just above the falls. But it sat there long enough that I snuck into the house with the binoculars, and I got a good look at it, and Samuel got a good look at it. And then it opened its wings, and it took off further upstream, and we just got to watch it fly right over the creek. It is just incredibly majestic. No matter how many times you see a bald eagle, I feel like it still inspires this when you see it, because they're just so strong and so graceful. So that was a really nice treat. We've seen a bald eagle here before. It's been several years, and we were in the house. I think it was maybe January or February when we saw it. It may be that eagles come around in the warmer months, but I don't think so, because the canopy, even over the creek, the canopy fills in a pretty lush way, and the bald eagle is so large that I don't think it would be a comfortable place to navigate once the canopy fills in. But boy, was that a treat, and I thought about the fact that I would share that with you this episode. Ever expanding skill set. All year, hashtag Power Pantry is the tag for exploring the inner workings of your pantry, really making your pantry work for you. And in April, we are taking a look at condiments. There is great conversation on the Ravelry thread, an exchange of recipes and ideas. One I want to point out in particular is Joanna Spring of Knit Spin Farm Podcast gardens. She has a greenhouse now. She gardens with her husband, and they have a lot of salad greens. She is determined to try 10 new salad dressing recipes with all of her greens. So if you have an idea and you can help her out with a recipe or even a list of ingredients, I think she would really appreciate that, and so would I. And if you have anything to share about making condiments of your own instead of buying them, or of cooking with condiments that aren't just a topping, but an integral part of a recipe, I'm very interested in hearing about that. I have just been in such a rage over Thai chili paste. I want to put it in everything. And this week I wanted just a really spring-like dish. So I turned to a tried and true favorite, Jean-Georges Van Gerichten's ginger fried rice, which is a delightful spring recipe. I put Swiss chard and sauteed leeks into the rice, and I just wanted to give it a little more lift and flavor, so I stirred in a tablespoon of Thai chili paste. Yum! It's topped with grated ginger and minced garlic that has been sauteed until it's crispy, and then a crispy fried egg. It's a fantastic spring dinner idea. I have linked to that recipe in my show notes. I've also been thinking about salads and salad dressing. I rarely purchase store-made salad dressing, but once in a while I might have a coupon, or there's a combination that I really want to purchase and try and then see if I could imitate it and then make it myself from then on. So last week I bought a ginger salad dressing. I've really been enjoying it. I've looked at the ingredients and I've thought about ways to create my own. So I will probably be mastering my own ginger salad dressing recipe once this store-bought bottle is gone. I've also been thinking a lot about chimichurri sauce. Does anyone have favorite combinations that just really dance in your mouth? I like the idea of chimichurri sauce over a grilled steak, maybe flank steak, or shrimp, perhaps. I think that could be interesting. I've even had grilled vegetables glazed with chimichurri sauce. So if you have any tips or suggestions on that, I would really like to hear them. You can tag your fridge, freezer, pantry, condiment ideas with hashtag PowerPantry so that others can find them and join in the conversation on Ravelry. Last Saturday was the fourth session of my Sheep to Shawl class at the Fibercraft Studio in Chestnut Ridge, New York. By far, this class has been my favorite to date. I can't believe how many things we did in the course of one day. We started with discussion of a reading, and we had been given the month before a very short reading called A Preamble About the Crafts. It's by Dr. Gerda Kramer, and we were told by the facilitators of the Sheep to Shawl course that this reading was part of what influenced the founder of Fibercraft Studio to create the place that we have been enjoying for handwork and the arts. And I'd just like to share a short passage from this reading because it inspired the title for today's episode. And I just found it so powerful and it felt so true. Patient repetition, doing again and again procedures that only seem to be the same, entering ever more deeply and intimately into the qualities of the material. This trains the will. The movements of a handworker are measured, harmonious, well considered. It is not only unevenness in the substances that are smoothed out, but also unevennesses in character. The result of this work, the product of his own hands, shows a person how far he has progressed in his schooling. Isn't that fabulous? I just thought that was such a great encapsulation of part. I don't know if spiritual is really the right word for the way I see it, but it's just very powerful and very meaningful to me. This idea that working with materials is not just about making a thing. It's also about the internal experience that you're having as you learn to use your hands and learn greater and greater control over what you're doing. So that started the day, fascinating conversation. Then we were taught how to use the drum carder, which is something that I've really been excited about because I have never used a drum carder or even seen one up close. Before we were able to really start using the drum carder on our own, however, we were whisked away to Eurythmy class. Have you ever been to Eurythmy class? I had not. I vaguely remember reading it in the description and just being like, oh, I had no idea what it was. And the evening before, one of our facilitators, Chris, just wrote a brief message like, We're having Eurythmy class, so bring some slippers or soft-soled shoes.
Okay.
I had a just like a nagging feeling that maybe I should look up Eurythmy shoes and see what that meant, but I didn't. I was in a hurry and I just put some slippers in my bag and we headed off to Eurythmy class. And when we got there, none of our slippers and soft-soled shoes were appropriate. We all had to use Eurythmy slippers from the studio. I was not wearing socks. But I just decided to get over it, put on the Eurythmy shoes, be a big girl, and do the class. And I absolutely loved it. Eurythmy is the movement portion of Waldorf schools, which were conceived of by Rudolf Steiner. And the reason that I'm interested in this fiber arts course is that I would like to understand more about Waldorf education, because their curriculum includes handwork at every grade level. So besides the handwork, there are other things that make Waldorf education unique and a different experience from Montessori education or a public school education or anything like that. And one of those components is this Eurythmy. So Eurythmy is a kind of movement training. It can even resemble dance a little bit. Sounds and color and rhythm are all very important components. And Eurythmy, besides just being like a physical movement class, is also elevated to the level of like a dance troupe kind of thing, right? There's a huge performance aspect to it. And in those situations, often the theme or the underlying text for a performance will be a poem or a series of poems or a piece of literature or something like that. Our Eurythmy instructor was amazing. She was just so elegant and just so open and fluid. It made me want to be just like her. And there was definitely a strong dance element, but there was also a rhythmic element. There was sound, there was color, and through many of the different activities, she was reciting lines of poetry to us as we were moving. Can you see why I would have left it? Oh my gosh, it was the most amazing experience. The only downside is I think Eurythmy is like a really communal experience. I don't think it's something you could really practice on your own. Although I could be wrong about that, and maybe I will bring my questions to the next class. I think there will be several sessions where we have some kind of Eurythmy component to the day. And I have to say, it's not a favorite of most of my classmates. But I don't know, maybe it's just, there's just something in me that really was struck and moved and excited by it. When we were done with Eurythmy class, it was lunch, and toward the end of our lunch break, I decided to give the drum carter a try. I had some Hog Island fiber left because I haven't spun it all to date, and I combined it with some naturally dyed fibers that are available for purchase in the Fibercraft studio. So while we're working in all the different aspects of our day, part of the space is kind of a shop. And people will come into the shop throughout the day. It's sparse, it's periodic, but they come to buy yarn and to look at things. And I had noticed that there were some bags of naturally dyed fiber, and you could just buy it by the ounce. So I purchased some blue and some very brilliant yellow, and I used them to card 3 bats. I didn't know it would be 3 because I'm a beginner and I didn't really understand how much fiber the drum carder would take. And it just so turned out that the amount of fiber I had made 3 bats. So I have, there's a photograph in the show notes of these 3 bats. I would say there are maybe just under an ounce each, maybe 0.7, 0.8 of an ounce. And they have blue and then a band of white and then a band of this very vibrant sunny yellow. I have not thought at all about what I will do with them. I am just so thrilled about looking at them right now that I haven't thought about spinning them. The other reason I haven't thought about spinning them is because I have so much more spinning to do this month than I have in the past. Each time we meet, we're invited to take home a little bit more of the Jacob fleece. And I think we're on to our 3rd fleece as a group. Jacob fleeces aren't very big, but we've all been taking a few ounces every time we meet to go home and, you know, wash them and figure out how we want to process them and spin them. And so I've been doing that. But in the afternoon, we had placed before us by our instructors 9 different kinds of washed fiber. And we were invited to touch them. And our instructors told us, sort of fleece and fiber source book style, a little bit about the origin of each of these kinds of fibers, what they might be good for, what the characteristics were, something about the sheep, or some of them are not sheep fibers, something about the animal. And then we were invited to take some. This is already been washed fiber. Take some of whatever we wanted and spin it up, experiment, blend things together, and report back for the next class. So I took some, I tried to restrain myself because I really wanted to take some of everything, but I thought that was unrealistic. I wanted to just focus on a few kinds of fiber and really understand them. I took some Clun Forest and I took some Lincoln. And I am working right now on the process of spinning those. The Clun Forest is so delightfully springy and soft and just really brilliantly white. I really enjoy working with it. I just sort of separated the tips and the cut end, and then I used hand cards to make a series of roll legs, and I am spinning them. I am not spinning them on a Jenkins spindle. I'm spinning them on a little bit heavier top whorl drop spindle because I don't want something so thin and so fine. I want it a little more dense, and I haven't decided. I might keep these as singles or I might ply them together. But boy, that Clun Forest is just, it's really soft, a lot softer than I expected, and just really, really lovely. So that was fun, and I enjoyed it partly because I felt like I really did have the tools to work with it. I could take care of processing it on my hand cards. The Lincoln was more challenging for me because I think what I really need for that is I need a pair of combs, and I don't have them. I don't have any experience using them. And so the staple length was a little bit too long to work on my hand cards. I felt like things were a little bit matted, like I couldn't open up the locks as much as I wanted to with my fingertips. So that was a little bit challenging, and I have spun all of the singles for that. I find because of my preparation, it's a little bit wiry and hairy. I don't know how great that yarn is going to be, but it, you know, it's an experiment. It's a learning process. So I feel like I'm learning a lot. I am getting my hands on a lot of different fibers and sort of understanding them and what they would be good for. I will definitely 2-ply or maybe even 3-ply that sample of Lincoln and see what it's like. The project we had due for our April class was to create or at least begin a project with our own hand-processed and hand-spun Jacob fleece. The assignment was to design a small bag or pouch that had meaning and purpose. I floundered with this idea. I had been thinking about it since we were told about it on the very first day of class, and I had just been letting it roll around in my mind. So finally, I felt like I really needed to get moving on it. And having read Housekeeping by Marilynne Robinson, I just kept going back to the character of Ruth, who is a transient character. By the end, we learn, you know, she's a drifter. She rides on the rails and works at part-time kind of menial work and wonders about her former stability in her life, but never really does anything about it. And I thought, you know, what would be the kind of bag or pouch that a character like that might have? And I think for transient people, having a little amulet or a little pouch, sometimes they're called medicine bags. They're often worn right at the throat and contain something valuable. Sometimes they contain folded up money, but sometimes they contain trinkets that are of more sentimental value or maybe elevated to the idea of a relic. And so I've decided to call the pattern for the little pouch that I designed reliquary, which is like a container or receptacle for relics. Which is kind of like an overwrought way of saying an amulet or medicine bag. And I knit this out of 3 shades of Jacob wool, which has been hand spun by me. One of our instructors suggested that the opening of the pouch be white and pure. And then if you wanted to use other colors to, you know, darken them sort of at the base of the bag, but to keep the area where the hand goes in white and pure. So that's the order of the colors. I used a white and then, or off-white, and then kind of a marled gray, and then a very dark brown for the bottom or base portion of the bag. And I designed it with a little flap that flips over the top, a little bit of a ribbed opening so that it will hold within whatever you decide to put in there. And then I had a great time raiding my grandmother's button box for a button to sew on. And then I made some fringe with leftover yarn. And Sarah Swensty of the Fiber Trek podcast had sent me a while back just a little tiny pouch of some very rustic looking glass beads. So I put some beads on the bottom and I put a couple of jewelry making findings or jump rings on the inside so that it would hold a leather strap so you could wear it around your neck. I made this, I worked out the pattern, and then I knit one again to just refine the pattern. And as I knit the second one, I took a series of detailed photographs showing the steps. And I have completed this project, completed the pattern, and it is available on Ravelry. It's actually been available for a little while, but I didn't have time to talk about it on the podcast last episode because I was so busy talking about Turkish spindles that I didn't care to extend the audio podcast any longer. But I wanted to tell you about that today. So the name of the pattern is Reliquary, R-E-L-I-Q-U-A-R-Y. And it is written in a very similar way to my Another Door Opens pattern, which is every row of the pattern is written out with little percentages. And with this pattern, there's also a series of 8 photographs, instructive kind of tutorial photographs about the different steps of the knitting. Of course, needle size and gauge and all that are given, but I feel like this, since it's not a garment or anything that has to fit, it's quite flexible, and you could use size 0 or 1 needles and very fine yarn to make a really, really tiny amulet. Or you could use bulky yarn and maybe size 5 or 6 needles to make a small pouch. I think it could be good for an earbuds pouch too, or just something for small keepsakes and special things. It's great for scrap yarn or leftover yarn or something you might have that's really special. It's perfect for a very small amount of hand spun yarn. So if you're a new spinner and you have just small amounts of yarn from experimenting, I think this pattern would be perfect. There are color changes marked in the pattern, but of course it is not necessary. And you could knit the whole pouch out of just one kind of yarn. So I hope you give that a try if you're interested in a small bag or amulet. Yarn lover at large. This very weekend is the New Jersey Wool Walk weekend. Because I had so much work planned for around the house, I really didn't think about an excursion to yarn shops in New Jersey on the weekend. But it just so happens that the Wool Walk began on Thursday, and I was in the Marstown area for my first poetry class, which I will talk about a little bit later. And so I was able to step into 2 different yarn shops just because they were right in the area. One is the Blue Pearl in Madison, New Jersey, and the other is Trillium Yarns in Morristown, New Jersey. And I did make a few purchases and have plans for some future projects. But I didn't, one of the other reasons that I didn't really plan to spend a lot of time in yarn stores this weekend is that I have a big weekend on a farm and fiber tour planned for this coming weekend, April 25th and 26th. The farm and fiber tour is the Washington County Farm and Fiber Tour in Washington County, New York. This is north of Troy, east of Saratoga Springs, some beautiful farm country. I think one of the main towns is Greenwich, New York. This is the site where the Southern Adirondack Fiber Festival was held in September, where I had such a wonderful time, and that's where I found out about this farm tour. So I'm very excited to be touring with Fee, my pen pal of, I don't know, I think it's been well over a year that we've been pen pals and we've never met. So I'm really excited about that. And I think I will be meeting up with Saratoga Knitting and maybe some other knitters, spinners, fiber lovers. If you think you will be going up to Washington County for the farm tour, let me know. Maybe we can meet up. I have posted some spots on my itinerary, but I haven't firmed up my itinerary, and I won't be doing that until I get a chance to talk in person with Fee and we kind of make our plan. And then I guess maybe Fernanda and I will post those on social media once we come up with our plan. Maybe we'll even stick to our plan. Who knows? I know that one of the stops on our tour will be St. Mary's because they have the cashmere goats. I'm just really excited about seeing their facility. And they will also have on display some handwork from their school. I was talking to Sister Mary Elizabeth at the Southern Adirondack Fiber Festival. So this was way back in September, and she was talking excitedly about some things that would be on display during the tour, that they were getting them ready. And apparently this group of nuns had a school location in New York City. I'm not sure of the details of it, but they had found this kind of treasure trove of samplers and embroidery and other work that was done by young women in their organization, and that they were in the process of creating an amazing display of those items. So I'm very interested in seeing them, in seeing the goats. And this year I am going to buy some cashmere yarn for myself. I really like the way the lining of Samuel's knitted cap came out. And even though the weather is warming up, I haven't stopped thinking about making one of those for myself this year. So that's a definite stop. And there are other farms that interest me and that have been recommended. Fernanda and I will make up a plan and we will let you know. We're also thinking of maybe having a dinner with some friends on Saturday evening. So if you plan on coming, do let me know. Double happiness. In a previous episode, I talked a little bit about being awarded a grant, a technology grant, to purchase tools and materials for the fiber arts. This has been just a really powerful experience for me, and working with the folks at the Fibercraft Studio is part of my training and learning how to use all of those things and to relay what I know to young people. And I have received all of the equipment for which I placed orders. And students who have been participating in a knit and crochet club at one of the high schools where I work have been helping me test out materials. They will also be helping to write the curriculum that we will follow next year. But I really didn't think they would be prepared to do that until they understood the tools that we had and the potential for using them. So they have learned, several of them have learned how to spin. Some are using top whorl spindles, and one is using a Turkish drop spindle. And these two young ladies are predominantly crocheters. We've talked a few times about recording a little segment for the podcast. And last week on Monday, we finally were able to do that. So I'm thrilled to share that conversation with you today. I will say that we recorded in my office at a school, and the sound quality is a little bit different from the sound quality of the podcast. I'm hoping that when I do the mix down, it will sort of even out the sound a little bit. But nevertheless, I think you will be delighted with Celine and Courtney and will really enjoy their conversation. So here they are. Well, good afternoon, ladies. I'm here with two members of String Theory, our after-school knit and crochet club. And how about if you introduce yourselves and say a little bit about what you're working on right now?
Okay. I'm Celine, and right now I'm spinning this. I'm spinning a Rolag. I am. And just like one of my random projects or something. Okay. Yeah, My most recent project was a very large, colorful shawl that was very helpful during the winter months. So that's the latest thing that I've completed. And
that was in crochet?
That was in crochet. And yeah, I haven't brought it in yet, but that's the last thing I completed back in like February, I think. And since then, I've just been spinning.
So my name is Courtney, and currently I'm also spinning, but I'm working with a Turkish spindle. Yay.
Yay.
And my recent projects were amigurumis. If anyone doesn't know what that is, it's basically like a little cute plush doll of anything you want, basically. So the latest amigurumi was a bunny with the a cute little purple body, and it was just white, and I made that for like my little cousin, and obviously that was like in a field of crocheting. And the other amigurumi I made was a Jack Skellington from Nightmare Before Christmas, and that was actually my first sale I made. So basically there was this guy in my class, and he asked me what he wanted, like, because he found out I did crocheting, and I'm like, okay, sure. And he bought it from me. I'm like, yay, my first sale.
Good job. So, Courtney, how long have you been involved in doing crafting like this?
Oh, well, I did knitting since I was 5, but it was just the basics, not the complex stuff that everyone does, but I started getting into it more, like, this past year, and I made a lot of stuff.
And that's when you started crocheting more.
Yes, you're the one who taught me.
And why do you gravitate toward the crocheting more right now?
Well, because right now I think it's a bit easier. I'm sorry if I sound lazy, but I feel like it's a bit easier, and plus you could do more things with it. The knitting.
You so, like to shape things, and that's a little bit easier with crochet. And you, when you, for example, with this bunny, did you use a pattern?
No, because, like, I made this amigurumi set before for, like, if you want to make little people. But, so, basically, I just took that same exact thing and made it into the bunny. The ears were really hard to figure out because he's like, you gotta increase and decrease and then just continue on to make that little flop. So.
But you were just going off something you knew and then adding the elements that you wanted.
Yeah, so it's like just coming from my head. It's like, oh, I'll do this and then I'll do that.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, you know those plastic safety eyes?
Yeah.
I don't really consider them safe because. They're hard plastic. Plus, if you're like giving a doll to a baby or something, it could easily slip out of the yarn, and then just like, and then the child could easily choke on it. So what I basically do is just take black yarn, crochet in a magic ring, and there you go. All you gotta do is just tighten it, and it looks closed.
And then you stitch it on.
Yeah.
So Celine, how about you? How long have you been doing things in the fiber arts?
I think like a really long time ago, my mom introduced me to knitting, and I did knit a very small scarf that I could probably still use, but I don't know what it is. And then I think 2.5 years ago now, like I first joined the club, and that's when I got introduced to crocheting. So, and I've been doing that ever since. I would like to get into knitting, but, you know, high school and, like Courtney said, it's just easier to stick with crocheting for now.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Do you have a dream project if you had all the time in the world and all the yarn and all of the colors that you would work on if you could?
Oh my gosh. I would probably... Does it have to be a practical dream?
No, dreams aren't practical.
I found I have two. the first one would probably be that shawl that Katniss had in the second Hunger Games movie, that really, like, fluffy big white one.
With
that,
just the one armhole?
Yeah, that, like, very, it was, like, really, I don't know, abstract shape, I guess, but, like, I thought it looked really fluffy, and I wanted it. And I think the second one was a pattern that I found for some floor-length cloak that I would have no practical use for, but I still think it would be really cool if I had it, or if I made it, so, yeah. That's my dream project. Oh, no.
I'm such an idiot! I just got my hair tangled into my spinning! This is why I wear my hair up in a ponytail and not down.
Oh my god, you're not an idiot, it's okay.
Oh, yeah, yeah, got it.
So, Courtney, what about you? What would be your... You gasped when I asked the question. What would be your...
There's so many things. Like, I would definitely make a Gryffindor scarf. I found a pattern for it, but it was for a circle needle. So I was trying to do that with my yarn.
Circular needle.
So I was trying to do that with my yarn, but my circular needle was keep folding up and it wasn't working as much. So I just need, plus I need more yellow and red yarn.
Okay.
And also, if there's anyone out there that knows video games, I love you. So, there's this video game called Destiny, if anyone has heard of it. I know I've said it many times with the two of you. There's,
Sometimes I even know what you're talking about.
Yes.
It's okay.
Okay.
No, there actually are a lot of folks in the fiber arts community who are really into games and anime and cosplay and just like you.
I have a story to tell about cosplay.
They will know what you're talking about. So, all right, so what's the video game is Destiny.
And there's these cloaks that like a character class has, and they're so complex and they have so many colors in it. I'm like, I want to do it. But figuring it out how to put each stitch in it, I have to have a gigantic grid paper. So I could just figure out, put yellow is like have black for like 4 stitches, and then switch to yellow for like 2. And then
All right, so speaking of figuring things out, do you think that working with the fiber arts is something that you do well because you like to figure things out? Or do you think that working with the fiber arts is helping you become better at figuring things out? Or maybe none of those or both of those? Do you notice any connection?
Well, it helps. It's like, if you... I'm trying to think, how to explain it, because, in algebra, there's some, really difficult stuff that you have to do. But it helps me pay more attention now, because it's, you gotta pay attention to, the certain stitches in that, and with class, it kind of helps me.
So you're saying you have better ability to focus?
Yeah.
Okay. Celine, what about you? Do you want to say anything about this?
Yeah, I think it would... It's given me a lot more patience, and it's definitely helped with I have mid project anxiety a lot. I will be in the middle of just making something and be like, oh my god, what if this doesn't work out? What if I'm gonna screw up? And what if I make a mistake and it ends up horrible? And I think just over time, it's just gotten better. I'm pretty good at this. I'll probably work it out. So I think it helps with that as far as, other projects that aren't related to the fiber arts.
So it builds your confidence?
Yeah. And
mid-project anxiety. That's so interesting. So you're fine starting.
I'm fine starting.
You're fine at the finish.
Yeah, the ending is really exciting because I finally got there.
But mid-project, you're like, oh,
in the middle,
no.
I'm like... Oh no, is this the right thing? Am I doing the wrong thing? It's starting to look weird. I panic.
So gradually, your anxiety has eased. Your mid-project anxiety has eased.
Yeah.
Because you've had success. You've had experiences where it works out.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's really interesting.
Yeah.
I like that. Well, there's a website, and I'm going to send you a link called the Craft Yarn Council. Mm-hmm. And this is an organization that is working to get more people crafting and teaching them the benefits about crafting. And it so happens that April is National Stress Awareness Month.
Oh.
Oh.
And the Craft Yarn Council is trying to help folks understand that the crafts, particularly knitting and crocheting, can be a great method to reduce stress. And they made a short video. It's 4 minutes long. And there are no teenagers in the video. So my question to you is, do you think that teenagers have as much concern about stress and anxiety as adults? And do you think that doing the spinning and the crochet is a way to help reduce stress?
Definitely.
Oh my God.
To be honest, like, now it's like, once you mentioned that April was Stress Awareness Month, no wonder why they put the quarterlies in April.
That makes so much sense now, actually. Although I don't know how that's supposed to make us aware of stress.
I know, but still, it adds stress when it's Stress Awareness Month. So I'm like, now this week, I'm just going to do project upon project so I could calm myself down.
Yeah. All right. Well, now I'm aware of that. I'm aware that it's Stress Awareness Month.
So do you think teens have a lot of stress?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm actually, like, I'm confused because maybe I haven't gotten that far in life yet, but, like, I'm wondering what adults have to stress about.
You
know? No, because here we have deadlines every other week. We have tests pretty much every 2 or 3 days. We have extracurriculars, and we have to worry about college. We have to worry about everything in life that's coming ahead of us. We have, like, 5 or 6 decades to prepare. Like, we need to know what taxes are. I don't know how to do taxes yet.
It's like, all I know right now is how to do savings and checking account. Yeah. That's it.
We know that there are things we should know, but we don't know them, and we don't know how to know them, so we're just freaking out here. And then there's, like, an essay next week. And we have to freak out about that, too. So we have short-term and long-term anxieties.
So how do you use fiber arts in your life to combat that stress?
I use it to procrastinate.
Does it create more stress?
It gives me more peace of mind, so it doesn't really add to the stress.
Okay.
With me, like, literally after I'm done with homework, I'm just like, you know, I'm sitting on the couch watching TV, spin my yarn, and I'm done for today.
Yes.
Because, like, I just don't, and, like, if I, and I'm like, and I would just eat and calm myself down because it's just, I don't know how to explain it, it's just something calm to do, and it's soothing.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, knowing that it was, like, part of my childhood because my grandmother taught me how to do knitting.
Mm.
So
that's, like, a calming aspect, too.
Yeah. I'm checking my phone while I'm holding up my spindle in one hand.
So, is there anything else you guys want to bring up or talk about?
Oh, the story I was talking about, how people with cosplay in that.
Yes.
So, for all you cosplayers or people who know about cosplay and love anime, and if you guys know the Rooster Teeth show called Ruby, it's a 3D animated anime. So, it was it's like popular because it's that, and also it's really epic. There was this one girl at Comic-Con in 2013. So I was waiting online to go to a panel, and she was going to be in the same panel as me. And then she was cosplaying the main character, Ruby. At first, I thought it was just regular cloth and everything, but I looked closer, and she completely crocheted every single part of her costume. No, like, literally, it's like there's, like, this one corset part around the waist. She literally crocheted the whole corset. And she had the boning, and then she, and even with the lace, she did, like, small chains of red and use that as a string. And I'm like, can I take a picture? So I'm like, it was just amazing how to see how someone could do that. And I'm like,
breathe, breathe. You. So you aspire to do that someday?
Yeah, like to. It's like at first I want to get the cloak done first, so that could be like the start, and then hopefully I can crochet the whole thing. The one thing that surprised me with her doing that, she was able to do ruffles, like a pleated skirt type of thing, and I'm like, I'm like, why you know?
Teach me your ways.
Exactly.
I think you can do it, Courtney. I really do.
Yay! Someone has confidence.
Do it. We're going to set you up to do that. I think junior year is going to be your year.
Oh, wait.
What do you think?
Well, with junior year for that big project, I was like debating either between doing a cosplay costume or doing a. Sorry.
That's okay. Oops. Or.
Or doing this big project of making, a lot of amigurumis and donating them. You mentioned before that thing where it's, you donate to, small bears or something and you give them to people who are depressed. I was thinking of making, a lot.
That would be a fantastic project. And that would also have community and social awareness in it, too. Yeah, there are a few of... There's one that has to do with monsters, and I think it's for people who are serving time. And then there's another one that is geared for people who are dealing with depression and other hardships. And, you know, it's simply a token of the fact that you're thinking about them and you just want to, you know, provide some way to help, and you're doing it with your crafts.
Yeah.
So, okay, we'll have to think about that.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe we can keep reporting on progress in another podcast.
Yay! Yeah.
All right, thank you both.
You're welcome.
Say goodbye.
You're
welcome.
Bye. Bye-bye.
Well, I hope you had as much fun listening as we did recording that conversation, and I hope to bring some future segments so that Courtney and Celine and maybe some of our other fiber artists can report on their progress. Gratitude journal. I am still working on my Soulful Stash project and participating in the Gratitude Knit Along with Amy Beth of the Fat Squirrel Speaks podcast, as well as many other knitters who are joining her for this knit along. And I'm also grateful that April is National Poetry Month and a chance to really delve into some poetry. I'm taking a class. It's a 3-session class, just 3 Thursdays during the month of April, through an organization called the Geraldine R. Dodge Foundation. I've spoken about them before. They put on the largest poetry festival on the continent. It has run for many years, and they are supporters of poetry and have a workshop series for educators each spring in multiple locations around the state of New Jersey. Experienced poets lead 3 or 6 session series for educators. I am so, so fortunate to have as my facilitator the wonderful poet Ed Ramone. He's just speaks with such feeling, such depth of feeling and knowledge. He's so inclusive. We have a very big group, 14 teachers. And the way we proceed is that the first night, everyone comes with copies of 4 poems. Some are short and some are a little bit longer, but we tend not, because the focus is so much on oral and oral reading an experience that we tend not to pore over very long texts. The poems tend to be relatively short. So we come with copies of these four poems for everyone, and the author's names have been removed. And later in during the last session, we'll exchange a piece of paper that's kind of a key and with all of the author's names. But we tend not to talk about, you know, this is a good poem. Oh, this is author so well respected, et cetera, et cetera. We tend just to experience the poems. And Thursday night was the first night of the workshop. And we didn't have any of the poems in front of us to hold and look at until the end of class. So we were operating completely off an oral reading of the poem. Many poems and poets that we did not know. And it was just extraordinary. So then at the end of class, everyone picks up the poems that everyone else brought. And these, I don't know, 4 times 14 poems become our textbook for the remaining weeks of the class. It's awesome. And our facilitator, Ed, will have different activities that we do with the poems. So this week, our assignment is just, you know, read through the packet, see what you like, you know, see what moves you. Read the poems that you only heard aloud in the first session. And just play around, mix and match, see if there's anything that goes together. All that kind of experimentation. So that's what I've been doing. I've tried to spend a few minutes with poetry every day in April, and I thought I would share this poem with you. This poem is titled To Be of Use. I believe it's by a poet named Marge Piercy. I am familiar with the poem, but like I said, these poems don't have the authors on them. To Be of Use. The people I love the best jump into work head first, without dallying in the shadows, and swim off with sure strokes almost out of sight. They seem to become natives of that element, the black, sleek heads of seals bouncing like half-submerged balls. I love people who harness themselves, an ox to a heavy cart, who pull like water buffalo with massive patience, who strain in the mud and the muck to move things forward and do what has to be done again and again. I want to be with people who submerge in the task, who go into the fields to harvest and work in a row and pass the bags along, who are not parlor generals and field deserters, but move in a common rhythm when the food must come in or the fire be put out. The work of the world is as common as mud. Botched, it smears the hands, crumbles to dust. But the thing worth doing, well done, has a shape that satisfies, clean and evident. Greek amphoras for wine or oil. Hopi vases that held corn are put in museums, but you know they were made to be used. The pitcher cries for water to carry, and a person for work that is real.
Acorns are dropping off my Jenny's house. Two ducks in my spyglass, fiery as a mouse. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. Leaves her down like a lady, waiting for a naked man. River bends like an elbow, turning stones to sand. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.
Thanks for listening. Music for this episode is Sweet. Music and lyrics by Samuel St. Thomas, performed by Krista Long and Cesar Diaz. If you enjoyed today's episode, I hope you will consider leaving a star rating or a review on iTunes, or liking the show's Facebook page, or just joining the group on Ravelry and taking part in the discussion. Eat well and stay strong as you hone your post-apocalyptic skill set this week.
Nature's ever get you high till your face is mine. Jump a river naked, hike a country mile. It's a subway nature thing. It's a subway nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.